McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. Tender, juicy, and its own sauce. Would you look at that? Well, you can't see it, but trust me, it looks delicious. New McCrispy strips, now at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, it is time for another edition of the Hard Shoulder Bookshelf. A very special edition this week because if you've been listening, you'll know we are coming to you live from Toronto in Canada, and we are here with Ireland Gateway to Europe, and we're going to be talking about them in a bit more detail later on. But we haven't completely thrown out the running order because we know lots of you love this time every week. And last week with the former Mayo GAA footballer David Brady, plays The Score Takes Care of Itself by Bill Walsh up on the Hard Shoulder Bookshelf. This week gives me great, great pleasure to welcome Eileen Dunn, of course, former RTÉ newsreader and journalist. Eileen, real pleasure. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Listen, thanks a million for joining. Before we talk about books and everything, just in terms of Gateway to Europe, and later in the show today, we're going to be going down to this Ireland Park down by the seafront, and there's a kind of a famine memorial there. With these sculptures and these huge big kind of blocks of Kilkenny limestone with these names inscribed. There's an amazing Irish-Canadian story that kind of gets overlooked by the noisier neighbour down the road.
Exactly, but obviously it's coming more to the fore at the moment. I'm here representing the Kennedy Summer School, and 2 years ago we had the then Ambassador to Ireland, Nancy Smythe, down at the school, and she spoke about that and the connections. And I mean, we heard a story yesterday when the famine people started to come here, there were only 20,000 Canadians living in Toronto, but 40,000 Irish people came. They built the railway, they built the houses, they built everything. This sculpture by Rowan Gillespie, I'm really looking forward to seeing it, because we have the equivalent in Dublin of the people leaving, and this is them arriving now in Toronto.
Yeah, and it's funny, we're going to get into this in more detail, I think, later in the show when we're down there, but you know, those 40,000, the experience in the States was a lot of them moved into these communities within the cities, and there was a kind of a ghettoization. You had your Italian community, the Jewish community, the Irish community, and they often were in kind of contest with each other. And in Canada, they took a different approach. These 40,000 came into Toronto, and then they were sent out of the city. And within a few years, they'd have 150 acres. They were stakeholders in society, a really different experience.
And I think that persists to this day. I don't think you have the ghettoization in Canada that you have in the States, that all the communities mix. And again, somebody else, a Galway man who's been living here for more than 30 years, was saying the city continues to grow and it's absorbing people all the time. And it doesn't matter, as long, they say, Irish people do very well here because most of them who come now are graduates and they get good jobs and they melt into society very quickly. Mm. That there just doesn't seem to be that ghettoization that there is in the States.
Like I say, we're going down to that park a little bit later, so I look forward to seeing it as well, the sculptures that are there. But I know we're meant to be talking about books, but anyway, you'll forgive me. I want to ask you about the conclave, because I know you would have covered conclaves in the past for RTÉ.
I have to tell you that the first time I really missed being at work was in the last couple of weeks.
Really?
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. And the girls, particularly when Pope Benedict resigned, it was a big surprise to everybody in February 2013. And it was scramble, get us on a plane, get us out there quick, myself and Miriam O'Callaghan, and Fiona Mitchell was sort of the producer on the ground because she was living there. And I was tic-tacking with the girls and they were saying, oh, come back, come back. So they were all in Rome, same team. So, I've been watching avidly, obviously, from the sidelines this time.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, the difference this time, Pope Francis had been ill for quite some time, so it wasn't a huge surprise, although he had rallied to some degree in maybe in the couple of weeks before he ultimately passed away. So, I mean, are you kind of fascinated it from a just a story, a journalistic point of view as to how it's covered? Are you fascinated by the nature of what is happening itself, kind of behind closed doors in the Vatican?
I'm fascinated by the whole lot of it and by the way, what direction will it bring the church in now? Because there is a split. And the whole point is to find someone who can continue to guide it along whatever path. So there seems to be a conservative element and a more liberal element. And then I bought the New York Times yesterday, and some of the American cardinals who would be seen as more right-wing are seemingly galvanizing behind an African and saying, the African's time has come. But it's a conservative African that they're rallying behind, and, you know, a Trojan horse, perhaps, was the suggestion in the article.
It's amazing, really, isn't it? Because I guess we're all guilty of thinking about this in the context of Ireland and the church in Ireland and the numbers of people in pews and what have you. But from a Vatican point of view, I don't think they spend an awful lot of time kind of ruminating about Ireland. The church, the global church now, is much more relevant kind of in the southern hemisphere.
Yes, but at the same time, and because Francis was such a pastoral pope, and I think he reached beyond for a lot of people, this is a fantastic opportunity for the church. The church is on show and people are interested, and if they take something from it. And apparently, in over the last couple of Sundays, each cardinal that comes to Rome has a titular church. He's given a church in Rome. So they've all been going to these churches last weekend and this weekend, saying their masses. And the crowds have been flocking in, whether it's Cardinal Avelin brings in the French crowd, and, you know, other countries, other cardinals attract their own natives. But the crowds have been coming.
It's funny as well that the betting odds change in terms of their performance and the homilies that they deliver in these churches.
Well, the early favourite, Cardinal Parolin, who was the head of state, he apparently said the mass the Sunday after the funeral, and that should have been the canonisation of the young guy, yes, Carlo Acutis, which was postponed. So there were an awful lot of young people in the square who had come in for that. And they reckoned his delivery was very bland and it wasn't too exciting. But then they're kind of saying, well, maybe bland and consistent is good enough. But other people are saying he just wouldn't have the charisma maybe that Pope Francis had.
Listen, it's all very fascinating. I know you wish you were there. Henry McKean for News Talk is there. So we're going to be talking to Henry over the next couple of days as that story develops in Vatican City. We will move on to matters at hand and the reason that we asked you to be here today. And it's to place a book up on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. Before we talk about the book, was it hard to pick one? Sometimes people find it difficult, you know, to pick a single book amongst all others.
It was. And I suppose it also depends on when you would have asked me. If you asked me some years ago or if you asked me some years hence, it might be a different choice. But this one, actually, and I know you've been trying to get me for a while and I kept dodging it because I read this 30 years ago. So it meant I had to go back and read it because there's no way I could come on and talk about it without having reread it.
So what is it?
It's Brian Keenan's An Evil Cradling.
And why did you pick that?
Because Brian Keenan was the Belfast man who was kidnapped in Beirut in 1985, and he spent 4.5 years in captivity, some of them with John McCarthy, the English journalist. And obviously, working in the newsroom at the time, I was following the story intently and all this campaign by his sisters back in Ireland. And I was actually away. I was in the States with my sister when he was released in Damascus. And the whole thing was just fascinating. But when the book came out, I thought, oh, this will be really grim. I'm not sure if I want to read it. But it turned out to be an absolutely fascinating book.
Why? In what way? Tell us a little bit about the book and how he writes it and what he writes about.
He writes about the captivity, but first of all, he's a working class boy, Protestant from East Belfast. And though he left school at 15 and he was an apprentice, meanwhile, he was writing poetry and attending night classes. And I think a lot of people didn't know that about him. So he's actually, I imagine he must have been a fantastic teacher. He went to teach in the American University in Beirut, but he must have been a fabulous teacher because he certainly is a fabulous writer. The writer Frank McGuinness describes it and says, He became headline news when he was kidnapped by fundamentalist Shiite militiamen and held in the suburbs of Beirut for the next 4.5 years. For much of the time, he was shut off from all news. But from the horror has come something wonderful. An Even Cradling is a great book. With the publication of An Even Cradling, Brian Keenan is not letting the world forget. This is a mighty achievement by a magnificent writer.
And are there parts of the book that...
Well, just even from the beginning. So he explains, you know, he pick a beginning. Where do you start? So he said so many people had asked him, why did you leave Belfast? Why did you go to Beirut? So he said, that will be my beginning. And he felt somewhat trapped in the north of Ireland. He decided to get out, little knowing that he was going from out of the frying pan into the fire, basically, you know. But very early in the book, he brings you inside his head, and there you kind of stay. He brings you along the journey with him. Wait, let's see now, can I just find it? I will describe it briefly, that was his kidnap surroundings, so that you may see it for yourself. And he says, come with me now into the cell and stay here and feel if you can and if you will that time, whatever time it was, for however long, for time means nothing in this cell. Come on in. And he says, I pace my 4 paces backwards and forwards slowly, feeling my mind emptying, wondering where it will go today. Will I go with it while I try, or will I try to hold it back? And then he talks about his nights being filled with dreams and dreams being the cinema of captivity.
There's a poetic value to how he writes, isn't there?
It's beautifully written. Yeah. And that's what captures you. And I think the first year he was on his own, and he's describing a lot of that. So it's that. It's where his mind goes. It's how he deals with his captors, how he relates to them. And then he meets John McCarthy, and the two of them are together. And there are some very funny pieces in it as well. But there's also that thing of, obviously, at different times, it was more difficult for one than the other, and how they kept each other up. And, you know, he might say something to John that his mother might have said to his father, and that brings a smile to John's face. Or another time he accuses him of being a shilling taker, because John McCarthy claimed to be a count of the Holy Roman Empire, which meant he had Irish ancestors. And Kevin, or Brian Keenan, says to him, and you know what else you are? You're a so-and-so shilling taker. And that became a running joke between them. But they were moved. And so the first year, it's kind of getting you inside his head. But then as it goes on, it does get progressively darker, because they are beaten and they're moved around. They were moved 17 times in the 4.5 years, and they were tied up, you know, chained, and their one hand strapped to the other ankle, so they were totally bent over. If that's the evil cradling, I'm not sure, you know, that position, dumped into bags, driven all over the place. And at some stages the Americans were with them in different cells, then at one point they were all together. And they talk about losing the light and being in the darkness maybe for 2 weeks at a time, and then being in a really bright cell with white tiles, and saying, you know, the darkness was easier because you couldn't see the walls. Yeah. So there's all that sort of...
Is it a difficult... Despite the poetic value of it and the beauty of his storytelling, are there points in it that it's difficult to read?
There are, and particularly towards the end. I think he draws you in. He did it very well. He says at the beginning, I'm not going to do this consecutively, and he doesn't. But towards the end, as I say, it does get darker, and there's more about the beatings, and he describes it as a rape, you know, his space being invaded by this guy who stood over him and beat him and took away his dignity and took everything from him. So yes, there are parts where it's, you know, it's very hard to read that, because you have now, as I say, you're inside his head, you're totally empathising with this guy. And then John McCarthy, who we all saw when he came out too, was a lovely fella. And you're just feeling, you're heartbroken for them when you're reading what they're going through.
So it's a book you would recommend to people?
I would recommend it, because it's also the triumph of hope over experience, I suppose. And it deals with the mind and, you know, letting the mind go to a certain extent. But he talks about the miracle of going down those dark roads, but being able to come back exhausted, but intact. And that in itself, he describes that as a miracle.
Right, well, listen, a worthy addition to the Hard Shoulder Bookshelf, An Evil Cradling by Brian Keenan. Listen, as we said at the outset, it is difficult to pick ones. We always allow people a few honourable mentions of a couple of other books that have meant something to them or they just particularly enjoyed.
Again, I would say it depends on when you ask me. Yeah. So I try to do one fact, one fiction. I alternate. So one fiction book that I read quite recently was Sheila Winman, Still Life, which is about wartime Florence. And basically, it's a tribute to Florence and the art world. And it's about an art historian, Evelyn, who's in her 60s, and she meets a young British soldier because she's out trying to retrieve some of the art that was stolen by the Nazis and bring it back, and how their lives intertwine over the next 40 years. He's only in his 20s, she's in her 60s, but well, not over the next 40 years, obviously, but over the next 20 years, maybe. But it's, again, it's beautifully written, but it's basically a hymn of love to Florence.
And when you say you alternate, I mean, when you're reading fact, what types of fact are you reading?
It can be this, an evil cradling, or it can be biographies, or it can be, I don't know, history, biography.
Anything. You can read absolutely anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you always reading a book?
I'm always reading. It might take me longer now than it used to because I tend to get distracted by social media and I get annoyed with myself over that. So I consciously have to... now this, I had a 7-hour plane journey coming out, An Evil Cradling. I got a lot of it done on the plane. So I can get totally then caught up in a book when I'm on holidays. Like I might read a couple of books a week because I'll just, you know, I have the time and I can just sit there for hours reading.
And do you ever listen to books?
No, I've never done that.
Oh, there's certain books that are well worth a listen, I always say to people.
People are addicted and getting addicted. And I met a friend recently and she's training to be a reader of books.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's just... And then, well, people say that too. And some people reading their own books, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
But then again, some of them are not that good and it should be somebody else, you know?
Yeah. Sinead O'Connor reading her own book is amazing. Brilliant. It's just a great way to read it. But and like that, Matthew McConaughey wrote a book. And it is incredible. The life he had. His parents married and divorced each other 3 times. Yeah, an absolutely kind of chaotic upbringing. And kind of reading between the lines, really disruptive in an awful way, although he's very forgiving of them. But anyway, like that, certain books are easy to digest. Are you a good reader? Would you read the classics?
Yes, now and again. And again, now that I'm retired and I have more time, I keep saying I should go back. I mean, I read most of them when I was younger, and then I studied French in college, so I read a lot of French literature, 19th century, 20th century French, like Zola and Balzac and people like that. And I probably, because even reading An Evil Cradling 30 years later, it meant, now we've had the Good Friday Agreement since, and he does talk a lot about Belfast and what was going on there. So you get a slightly different perspective when you go back. So I probably should go back now and start rereading the classics.
What are you reading at the moment?
Well, I'm actually reading a classic because I've just started The Great Gatsby again because it's Gatsby 100 this year. I was at a fabulous concert in the concert hall a couple of weeks ago, Gatsby at 100, Guy Barker and the RTE Concert Orchestra. It was all that jazz age swing music. And it was, one of the songs was "This Joint Is Jumpin'." And the concert hall was, in a way that it isn't very often. It was a fabulous night. But I'm here representing the Kennedy Summer School and we are doing a session on The Great Gatsby. It just turned out last year, we had a couple of people there doing other things and they're all Gatsby experts. And we said, okay, Gatsby 100, let's do something. So our history session on the Saturday morning this year will be on Gatsby at 100.
And what do you like about Gatsby? Is it just the story itself? Is it the world that it brings you into, that kind of remarkable world?
Well, again, rereading it. I read it first probably when I was in my early 20s. My son then did it for his leaving cert in, maybe about... How old is he? About 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And we watched the movies and I read it with him and we watched the Robert Redford and we watched the new one. So we got kind of totally back into it again. But then just when I was picking it up and reading around it this time, sure, they're comparing Tom Buchanan or Jay Gatsby himself to Trump, the careless person, you know, who kind of doesn't really think about the consequences of what's going on around him. So again, it's, I'm going to be reading it with a different perspective this time.
Yeah, well, listen, it's well worth a mention as well. So for all of those reasons and because of what's happening in the Kennedy Summer School later in the year. And listen, we might talk to you closer to that again, because it's a great, great event that's been up and running now for quite a few years. And maybe there'd be a little mention as well this year of the Canadian immigrant experience in all of it, given the relevance of that relationship, the increasing relevance of it?
Well, I did have a chat with the Irish ambassador yesterday,
We're
hoping he might drop in if his schedule permits.
All right. Well, now that we've mentioned it on air, we've put it up to him, to John Kincannon, the Irish ambassador to Canada, who you might see at the Kennedy Summer School. You'll definitely see Eileen Dunn, former RTE newsreader and journalist. Eileen, a real pleasure. Thanks a million.
Thank you, Kieran.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.